Personally, I'm a big proponent of joint accounts. Unless there is a very specific reason to have an individual account, I think that accountability and transparency and being on the same page with goals and where money goes and where it's coming from, it's really hard to do if it's coming from individual places.
Welcome to Finance for Physicians, the show where we help physicians like you use money as a tool to live a great life. I'm your host, Daniel Rinn, and I've spent the last decade advising physicians on their personal finances with the mission to help them understand that taking control of their finances now means creating a future where they can practice medicine where, when, and how long they want to. Hey, Jen, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm enjoying the snow in Lexington, Kentucky. Jen is in Colorado where it's supposed to be snowing already. And is it not snowing there yet?
It's 70 today.
Yeah. So it's 70 there and it's 27 and snowy in Lexington, Kentucky. So.
Yep. My sister's in Columbus, Ohio, and she sent me a picture of their backyard today and it's totally snow covered. And I was like, you officially got snow before I did in Boulder. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But anyways, we are... We're going to be talking about a fun topic. Well, I don't know. Not so fun. Maybe. I don't know if it's a fun topic.
Interesting topic.
An interesting topic. We've always kind of been curious. I know we've talked about it a lot. Jen and I have definitely talked about this a lot over the years. It's been kind of an interesting observation from the families we work with. And what's been interesting is how few of them get divorced. In fact, it's so little that it's like, a handful at max. And we work with a lot of families. So it's extremely low rate of divorce, much, 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 much lower than like the normal rates you would see in the general population. And so that's always been an interesting topic. We're going to kind of try to talk through why we think that's occurring. Some of this is opinions and, you know, it's impossible to say
mostly opinions.
We'll say mostly opinions, somewhat informed, mostly opinions. But I think there is definitely some takeaways that would apply that you can kind of learn from and seeing that. So, I mean, the first takeaway I think of is like, maybe there's something to it that you, if you have your finances in order, like that's the obvious one. It's like, if you have your finances in order, which our clients typically are going to have their finances in order, you're less likely to get divorced. I mean, it might just be as simple as that. Now, I don't think it is. I think there's more to it.
Yeah, I think it's the entire process that goes into getting your finances in order, I think, lends itself to communication and being on the same page and transparency. And
I think right.
All things are good for a marriage.
And so if you're not working with us just for like... context, the like our approach is a little bit more involved in that it's, you know, a thorough process that gets into like what's most important to you. Let's understand your goals and values and help you craft a plan. We do, you know, help with investments and that kind of thing, but it's much more about like the plan and the planning and the execution. And so I think if you were a financial planner that just strictly looked at investments, it might be a little different.
Sure.
But since we're like very involved in the wide scope of families' finances, I think it's especially true for us is that we get to get in there. So when I'm working with somebody for the first time, I'm trying to understand like, how do you guys communicate? Like, what are we all on the same page? That's a big, and even when I think when we're talking with potential clients, we're trying to figure out, Are they on the same page about life?
And are they both present? I think that's a big tell too, is one of our goals is to get both spouses involved because I think there's a lot to be said for doing this together and being in this journey together and taking everyone's opinion and views and beliefs into account and empowering people who might not be as familiar with finances. So I think that part of it is important too.
Yeah. So maybe we could look at like some examples of how not to do it first. I think So we were saying, like, it's about having a good personal finance hygiene or whatever you want to call it, like having, being on the same page with your money would lend itself to a lower divorce rate. But I think you could also look at it like, well, not being that away would lend itself to a higher divorce rate. And I think the money thing comes out as like, I think they always say that's like a top divorce cause is money.
I think it's pretty much always number one.
Yeah. I mean, do you think it's the money that's the, it seems like the money is more of the end result of underlying problems?
Probably, because I'm sure it's a multitude of things. If we're already to the point that we're fighting over money, it's probably not coming from a place of understanding or communication or trying to fix it. But if we can be proactive with that, and if we can communicate about it before it becomes a problem and before we're blaming, I think there's a better chance of that being a successful conversation.
Yeah. So going back to what I was saying, like some examples of what I think ideally you're not doing. So one of them, I think of like some people, a potential client I once talked to that shared with me, I'm not going to give specifics because, I mean, I'm sure nobody knows this person, but to keep things anonymous. But anyway, they shared with me how they had a substantial debt that they'd taken out. And then in the conversation, I talked about how both spouses needed to be involved. And then at the end, they said, well, there's also something I needed to mention. Like, she doesn't know about the debt. Ooh. And I'm like,
that's a tough one.
Okie dokie. So, and that was like a problem. Like he did not want to tell her about the debt. And he had like his reasons for it. I was like, well, we can't really work with that.
Yeah. We can't hide things. We gotta be on the same page. We have to be transparent. We have to be really starting from a place of openness with finances.
So they might, I mean, hopefully they figured that out, but they might have gotten divorced. And I bet that they would have said potentially that money was the number. Like, let's say she found out about the debt and she's like, are you lied to me about the debt. I'm done.
Yeah. So is it money? Is it communication? Is it honesty?
You might have they might have said money was the reason, but I think that's like a honesty thing more than it's a being on the same page, I think.
Yeah.
Thing. And that's another example. What are some other examples of bad habits or bad examples of what not to do?
Bad example, blame. I think blame, when we're talking about finances, pointing fingers is never going to get us where we want to go.
My favorite example, I've screwed up on a bunch. I've gotten better at it a little bit, but I used to open the credit card statement and I'd be like, Allison, what's this thing? Allison, what's up? What's this charge?
I'm guilty of that.
I might say like, why? I don't know if I would just, I mean, maybe I said, why did you buy that? Or I don't know. I probably got even more aggressive, and she heard that as like, you're the problem.
You were wrong. Yeah. Yeah.
That's never good.
Nope. That's not a good place to start a conversation. So I think if we can start those sorts of conversations, which are hard anyway, from a place of understanding, trying to get on the same page, then it becomes much less about you and more about us.
But the problem with that approach, like the open the credit card and like kind of point the finger, is that she gets mad, I get mad. I'm like, that wasn't effective. Not going to do that next time.
Yeah.
That's usually the outcome. So then that spirals to like, I'm just going to do the finances and, you know,
I'll just handle it.
She's going to do it. So she stays at home with our kids. So the tendency when that circumstance is like to just have the person breadwinner manage the finances and this stay at home spouse to just like do the home stuff. And that's a bad path because you're not communicating any, but that's because it's painful to communicate because you start a fight every time you bring it up.
Yep.
But it's what that would spiral into a train wreck.
Yeah. And I think it would for anyone. I'm sure that's not a specific to your household situation. I've seen that exact thing happen a million times.
Yes. What are other examples of what not to do?
What not to do?
Your spouse.
Hide things, which I think.
Hiding, yes. Hiding is.
I know we're, and this is not going to be a everyone has to do this, but I personally am a big proponent of joint accounts. Unless there is a very specific reason to have an individual account, I think that accountability and transparency and being on the same page with goals and where money goes and where it's coming from, it's really hard to do if it's coming from individual places.
Right. So like our money instead of...
It's our money.
My money.
Yeah.
Well, I agree for sure. Why would that be a problem to have separate finances? I guess I think that in itself is not a big deal. Like if your spouse has a checking account and you have a checking account, like that in itself is not that big of a deal, but
it's not that big of a deal if there's no giant problems, but how do you know?
Yeah. So when that conversation, I've had that conversation a bunch of times with people, typically the conversation comes up like, I want to have a separate account so that I can buy them something like a gift and then them not know about it. That's like the virtue signaling way to bring it up. They're like, I'm a great person. I'm going to have it separate so I can buy them a gift so they don't see it. But in reality, they're also probably thinking so that they don't see that I have an excessive sports betting problem or something.
Yeah. You know, there's always something and just be on the same page about it. Like if you want to spend on sports betting, if you want to buy a new bag, like who cares? Just be on the same page about it. You don't have to do it through individual accounts. And I think that's where the communication part of it comes in. And you might even, you know, intentionally decide we get $500 a month to do whatever we want with, and we're not accountable to each other for whatever that $500 a month is. But it's the process of going through making sure the bulk of what we're doing is on the same page and there's intention behind it and it's transparent.
Yeah, I've been in some super awkward conversations with couples that have separate finances. It almost always becomes awkward. It's difficult to not make it awkward because it's like my money. It's also a very selfish, I mean, it is, people are selfish. It is what it is. But like, it's a particularly selfish way to view things, especially if like you're the higher earning spouse. I mean, that's like that's an additional problem. It's like, do you like compensate for that? Like, is it like the fact that you're the higher earning spouse? Is that, you know, mean you get to spend more, or is there some sort of like equalizer? Like, I don't even know how you do that. But then, well, how do you value the household duties that don't compensate? And it's impossible
It's really, really challenging to plan effectively and transparently when things are separate. And you make 80% of our household income. Are you funding 80% of our retirement? Like, how do you, it's just really hard.
Usually that separate finances thing tends to translate to separate plans.
Yeah.
That's when I used to have lots of meetings with people, potential clients, I would ask them about that. I'm like, do you view it as like one unit, like a household unit? Is it like tie the knot, I guess? Like, are you all one unit do you have one plan together, or do you like kind of have separate plans and separate goals? And a lot of times when people have separate finances, especially when they're truly separate, and I don't just mean separate accounts, like some people have separate accounts that like intend to have combined finances. I mean, like they have your money and my money separate. They tend to have also separate goals and separate plans. And that's like, it's very challenging. But I'm curious, do you think you make that work? Is that an unworkable?
I'm not going to say it's unworkable. There's just a disconnect somewhere along the way. Like there's got to be an underlying reason that we don't want to have these accounts together. And that's where it kind of becomes uncomfortable from the planner's perspective is, you know, why? Like, why don't you want to have these accounts together? Like, are you hiding something, or do you have a bad experience in your past that makes you feel protective over accounts? But those conversations are not always fun, and people aren't always super honest about the why. And instead of giving us the real why, they'll say, I want to be able to buy a gift.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our firm, Renda Financial Planning. The goal of our podcast is to empower you to make better financial decisions. But sometimes the best financial decision you can make is to work with someone who understands your financial goals and has the expertise to keep you on track to reach them. That's where Ren Financial Planning comes in. We are a full-service financial planning firm that works with over 400 physicians and their families across the country. We charge a transparent monthly flat fee for our services and offer virtual meetings you can take from anywhere. Best of all, you'll get to work with a team that specializes in working with physician families. So whether you're starting out and wondering how you'll balance your student loan payments and saving for a home, or you are an established physician trying to figure out how to pay for your kid's college and how much you need to save to reach financial freedom, we can help. I'll put a link in the show notes to schedule a no-obligation meeting with one of our certified financial planners. Ren Financial Planning, LLC is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit renfinancial.com. That's W-R-E-N-N-E financial.com. Yeah, and I think when you combine finances, when you have them separate, even if there's not something fishy going on, it like tends to peep the person that with the other account is like suspicious. You lack of transparency breeds mistrust. It's like you're going to be like asking questions just because of the fact that you can't see it. And you're like, I bet they're trying to do something shady over there. And then it also, increases the chances probably that you are, because there's less accountability too on top of that.
Well, and it makes it less us and more you versus me. Like, well, I'm saving my money, you're spending all yours. Like, that's not healthy either. And it's challenging to plan for joint goals with individual habits and processes, and it's really hard to get on the same page.
Yeah, so difficult to make it work, in your opinion. Do you think you can make it work? I think you can make it work in rare circumstances, especially for like second marriages or something, or late stage marriages.
Later in life, marriages are definitely harder because people are kind of, they're in their habits, and it is a little bit more mine versus yours, because, they
have different families.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in that case, sure.
But the way I look at that is that's kind of like two households. It's a yours, mine, and ours. Typically in the later marriage, like if you have kids from a prior marriage or something like that, that's really just, it's like bringing two households together. So it's not, when I talk about it, like the traditional, not the traditional, but the early life example typically is like you're getting married to have your own household. And that's a different situation than like, my spouse passed away, or I was divorced and now I'm getting remarried and partnering up with another household in some ways. So I would say that's the more common scenario where separate finances work out, or maybe even need to be separate. But it still makes it tough, because you're still going to ask the questions like, well, why wouldn't they keep it completely open? Are they hiding something from me?
Yeah. Just like you said, lack of transparency can breed mistrust.
Yes. Yes. Any other big red flags to think about that in terms of finances and communication? And I think
touched on the big ones.
Not talking about, let's say you have complete transparency, combined finances, I think you can still not be on the same page in regular communication, just as a result typically of one spouse taking the lead and not. I think this is common with DIYers, I'm talking about with personal finances. So the DIY spouse typically takes the lead on their finances, and they probably because they enjoy it more. And then they do it, And then the non-DIY spouse is kind of like, I'm not that interested in it. And they just have no idea what's going on with the finances.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's the finances are, maybe they're all combined in everything, but I think in an ideal world, there's some amount of like communication, in particular around the values, goals and values. So that's kind of where my mind was going, is going back to like divorce. I think one of the, I don't think we've hit on this yet, but I think one of the biggest reasons people end up getting divorced is they have a values conflict, like an irreconcilable values conflict.
Yeah.
Like the one I've had several friends get divorced on this topic. They're like, I wanted to have kids. I didn't. It's like, why didn't you guys talk about that before you got married?
Yeah, that's a big one. We should talk about the 30,000 foot view of
kind of a big deal. Yeah. But people don't talk about it. So anyway, with your finances, you should also be talking about like same sort of thing, like with your values. A lot of times financial conversations bring up your values because you, the same question, like, do I want to have kids or do I not? Like you have to incorporate that into the finances. Ideally, your finances reflect your values. So if you're not on the same page about those, that's going to cause problems. Kind of have to talk through those things, ideally sooner than later.
And like you were saying, if one person's doing it, then I think it keeps both spouses on the 1,000-foot view, because the things that you can talk about together are, well, you spend too much money at Starbucks, when they are not clued into the context of, this is why we're trying to save where we're saving and, you know, save for this. And these are the things we talked about are important to us. If they don't have the context for the 30,000 foot view, it's going to be really hard to make the 1,000 foot view work or click or buy into. And if they're not involved in that process, then, you know, they're just going to lack that context.
Yeah. I've seen big time marital tension happen when one spouse believes that they should provide as much for their kids one spouse believes that they should give their kids all that they can or able to financially and kind of help fulfill all their wants so that they can live a good life, even at a young age. Whereas the other spouse is like, we need to minimize that so that they can learn to be self-sufficient. Like they need to be able to provide for their own wants and we don't need to give them everything they want.
Yeah.
That's a huge, huge difference in opinions, and that causes tons of financial tension, because the one spouse that believes in giving their kids their wants, like, for example, kid wants to play, my kids are in travel soccer, so we'll use that. The kid wants to play travel soccer and wants to get lessons and do another travel soccer league. And it's like the spouse that's on board with the kids wants, they're going to, you know, be all on board with that. Because it's very important for them to provide for all their kids' wants, to give them the best shot at a solid future. There's usually good intentions behind all these things. And then the other spouse is like, well, really, for me, family time is far more important than our kids getting to do the things that they want to do with their time. Like, our family time is much more important than that. Like, that's going to just raise the temperature and be a, I mean, that potentially can like break a relationship if you can't reconcile it. So ideally that comes up ahead of time or you kind of talk through it. And
well, and that's kind of what we try to get at when we take people through our values exercise, because it's, I think it's important to recognize that in that scenario, neither one is wrong. Like neither of those people are wrong. It's about understanding each other's perspective and finding a middle ground that works for both of you. It's not about winning or being right. It's, you know, going in with the mindset of, I want to understand what money means to you, and I want you to understand what money means to me, so we can find something that works for both of us.
Yeah. So I think at the end of the day, it's not really the numbers. I think sometimes people see like money as the number one reason for divorce. They think like it's like lack of money, maybe, or like literally the dollars. It's scientific almost. But in reality, I think it's deeper than that. It's not like net worth is not a good indicator. Profession is not a good indicator. Like,
would you say that if you looked at your clients who are on the higher end of our income versus the lower end of our income, that there's a happiness difference?
No, that's not a good indicator. It's not a good indicator of divorce. It's not a good indicator of what I would consider marital satisfaction. I mean, I'm sure that there's a point where low income causes stress that's not going to happen with high income, but like, it's not nearly as, like, it's probably 100,000 income, or it's a low number where people are generally pretty happy. So it's not, I don't think the money is as much the issue. It's more the result. It's like the warning sign of, it's like the ending red flag kind of, there's underlying issues that are deeper that cause it.
It's, you know, the communication around it.
And it's a good, I mean, money is one of those things. It's like they say, time and money, like you look at your time and your money and you can really tell what's most important to you. And so both of those things, like you might say, time and money are good measures of things. Like money is going to cause divorce. Time can cause divorce. Like, you know, not being present with your spouse can cause divorce. But really it's like, are you on the same page? Like, are you connected? Like, are you holding each other accountable? Do you have values alignment? And I think we get to see like what's interesting about financial planning, really good financial planning requires that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You have to have like good clarity on values and alignment and agreement and compromise and transparency and communication and all those things in order to do it. Like, it's kind of like built into the process.
For sure. And it's kind of like you said, those are big things that you want to talk about maybe beforehand. Like, do you want to have kids? That's would be a good thing to be on the same page about beforehand. But even if not, the sooner you can get on the same page about those things, or at least understand each other and find a middle ground, because it's very rare that people are in 100% alignment with everything. But you use the word compromise, which I think is a really important word to use with kind of that big picture planning. But
yeah, it's just like, I have to intentionally share our finances with my wife because she's not as interested in it, but she has important things like the chief values that 100% tie in the finances.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to be able to work through that. And they may be things that are not on my priority list. There's definitely things that are like, she wanted to buy like a couch or something and some piece of furniture. And I'm like, I have zero interest in that. That's like not anywhere on my priority list. Yeah. But like, that's a compromise, or, you know, whatever. She has her priorities. I have my priorities. And, you know, you got to compromise on some and make tweaks. And I mean, I think that's what I observe in our clients that are strong. Like, they can have the testing conversations, which we're sometimes present in.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, you're over here and you're over here. Where do we go from here?
Yeah.
Like, they're able to work through that and come up with.
That's where financial planning, I think, becomes so important, though. Like, when you can be that objective third party and let them each speak their piece and try to find a middle ground for that, because those conversations are painful. So most people aren't just going to be like, oh, we're back from soccer practice and I've made dinner. Let's talk about some horrible financial topics that I know is going to cause a fight or we don't see eye to eye on. But if you can have someone help facilitate that conversation and try to find a middle ground, I think that'll be a much more productive use of everyone's time and probably a more helpful outcome without fighting.
Yes. Fair fighting is what I would say.
Fair fighting. We're just communicating.
Yes.
We don't fight. We just communicate.
If you don't have a financial planner, maybe think about hiring one. Or if you are doing it yourself, I would say, especially if you're the person, the quarterback, make an effort to involve your spouse more. I think that's always a good step. In either case, I guess, there's always going to be one spouse typically that like takes the lead on finances.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's on them probably more so to make an extra effort to try to pull in the other spouse.
And I always, one thing that I always like to encourage people to have to kind of promote that, and when do we talk about, is literally having a when do we talk about it amount. Like, we can spend however much, but if you're going to spend something that's $500 or more, that's our we're going to talk about it limit. And that's, for some people, that's $100. For some people, that's $1,000, you know, whatever it is. But I think that's kind of a good checkpoint of, hey, let's make sure we're just being in communication about some larger purchases and what's on your radar and what's on my radar, and keeping everyone involved. And
yeah. Yeah. Just decisions in general. It's good to, because there's nothing more frustrating than having a decision made that you really had a strong opinion on that someone else made for you.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't care about their opinions.
They don't care. They don't want to be in the meetings. They don't care. Well, they care. Maybe they're just busy with other things.
Yes. So, all right. Well, any other parting thoughts, positive takeaways of good things to lean towards, or?
So maybe the issue is not necessarily finances. Maybe it's just communication.
Yeah.
When it boils down to it.
I think there's something to the tie the knot, and the, when two becomes one, it's like, I think that's like a little bit aspirational, but like something to work towards. At least that's how I like to think of it. It's like the more, you know, the old couples, you've probably been around, there's not that many of them, but like a really old married couple that has been married for like 60 years or something. Like my wife's grandparents, when they were both alive, were a good example, but they were basically like one unit. They were 100% one unit. They were just like, they knew what the other one was thinking pretty much. One time her granddad was like, he was quiet for a long time, and we're like, how come y'all are not talking? And he's like, we've said everything there is to say. I know what she's thinking. We're just enjoying our silence.
Yep. We are as on the same page as we could possibly.
We are 100%
live on the same page.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that would be the ultimate goal, is if, you know, you can work towards one unit. I think that's a good goal to have, but takes a little work.
Does easier with a third party.
Easier with
that's a financial planner, a therapist, whatever it is, some sort of third party to help facilitate.
Right. Yes. Especially if you're having trouble. I mean, everybody's got challenges. So therapists, financial planners, those kinds of, maybe a financial therapist.
Maybe.
That's a thing. All right, Jen. Well, it's been good talking through this. We'll look forward to next time.
Sounds good.
No guests or clients appearing on the podcast received any form of compensation for their appearance and obtained no other benefit from us. It should not be assumed that every client has had the same experience.